Hi, welcome to Wait, Hold Up, What? A podcast from the women at Eliminate Girl Hate. I'm your host, Dawn Hanks. And in today's episode, we talk to Anna Sweet, founder and CEO of Artist Block Wines. Anna is a Manhattan School of Visual Arts dropout success story. She is an artist who had her own gallery in 2017 and has been represented in a number of collections across the globe and coveted by collectors worldwide. However, a few years back, she decided she wanted to do something a little bit different, or maybe that's not even the right explanation. Maybe it's more that she wanted to add something new into her quiver. And so she conceived the idea of Artist Block in 2019 when her and her husband purchased a vineyard in Dundee Hills. So full disclosure, that's in the Willamette Valley, which is in Oregon, which is where we record from. And little Easter egg from the episode, but the winery that she has is literally two houses away from a home that my father and stepmother owned and my brother and sister grew up in. And at the time, it was fields and horses and no vineyards at all. But if you know anything about the wine world, you know that the Willamette Valley and Oregon wines have exploded in the last 20 years. And so seeing that as an opportunity and a curiosity to learn more about the wine industry, Anna came in and started Artist Block Wines with a winemaker and winemaster, Bree Stock, Oregon's only female master of wine, and started this kind of ingenious concept even in their tasting room. I believe they like to say that they brought color to the Willamette Valley in that it's not just a tasting room, but it's an art gallery. And you can see some of the amazing work that they're doing in this really cool, interesting space. And so I wanted to talk to Anna about all things art, wine, and how believing in yourself can help other people. So we hope you enjoy this episode with Anna Sweet.
Can a bra help change the trajectory of a girl's life? Did you know that nationally, only 20% of girls engage in at least 60 minutes of daily physical activity, a lower rate than boys? Or that girls' participation in sports drops off significantly from the ages of 10 to 17? Wait, hold up, what? Yeah. Some of the barriers that contribute to this include lack of financial means, lack of role models, dropping body confidence, and concerns about body changes, including breast development and the need for a sports bra. The simple intervention of a sports bra, along with the normalization of body development, can change the trajectory of a girl's relationship with body movement for her whole life. You heard that right. Her whole life. Every girl deserves to feel comfortable and confident in her own body. And that's why Bras for Girls partners with more than 25 athletic brands and donors just like you to distribute new, high-quality sports bras and breast development booklets to girls in need, ranging from the age of 8 to 18. Let's get girls in well-fitting sports bras right when they need them the most. Girls plus sports equals a beautiful world. You can donate to Bras for Girls today at brasforgirls.org. And as a side note, Eliminate Girl Hate has partnered with brasforgirls.org and will be donating a proceed of all merchandise sales to helping girls get in the bras that they need and keep them in sports. You can help by shopping the Eliminate Girl Hate store today.
How many times have you heard the words workplace and culture used together and found yourself rolling your eyes at the thought? Believe me, I'm with you. I'll be honest, as I record this, I just rolled my eyes. That's because the word culture has become homogenized in such a way that they actually had us believing ping pong tables and pizza were symbolic of a good place to work. COVID changed that. Remote work was a success in the eyes of many, and as such, our ideas of what constitutes a good workplace culture have changed, and it boils down to one crucial element: equity. Now, don't you roll your eyes again on me. It's true. The expectation of employees is that they have a work environment and culture that works for them, regardless of who they are. No more cookie cutter swag and Pizza Hut deliveries, mandatory after hours, happy hours, and all of the other things they do to make us feel like we're a family. This is especially true for women. Remote work gave many more hours in the day, the flexibility to feel more productive and present, and a choice in how and what style of work is best for who they are and what they do. This is at the core of what equity means, because the old way was made for one group of people. And this is where Eliminate Girl Hate comes in. We help create safe and equitable spaces for girls and women, and we help the companies that employ them be more profitable in the process. Not rolling your eyes anymore, are you? Check us out at eliminategirlhate.com. Use code WAIT HOLD UP WHAT in your contact form for a free consultation call and see how we can help you and your business. We are sponsored by Epiphany Recording Studio. Creativity needs to flow freely if you want to reach that aha moment that we're all looking for. At Epiphany Recording Studio, their goal is to create space that takes full advantage of those moments. From podcast and video production to music creation, you get the support you need to create compelling stories with a competitive sound. Your ideas can flow freely because they partner with you free of judgment, ready to be vulnerable, do the work, and make your projects look and sound their best. So let Epiphany Recording Studio help you reach your artistic vision by visiting them today at epiphanyrecordingstudio.com. Tell them Dawn sent you. Have you ever dreamed of writing a book? I know I have. Or maybe, also like me, you've started a manuscript. Maybe you've started 10 and you've just never finished it, or never let anybody else read it, or never thought you could publish it. Wherever you are in the process, Jim Woods would like to help. Jim's a writer just like you. But he's also a coach who loves helping writers bring their books into the world and make them a reality. If you are like me, sometimes you need that push, a supportive but demanding cohort along the way to put your stories out into the world and keep you on track. Jim Woods is that cohort. Visit jimwoodswrites.com and click the Let's Chat button. Mention our podcast for a free clarity call and get your story out into the world because we need it. Hi, Anna. Nice to meet you. My first in-person podcast. I keep saying live, but it's actually in person. I like to start and just ask people to tell our viewers what they do and a little bit about themselves.
Oh my gosh, what do I not do? I am an artist by trade. I grew up in an art gallery. My mom was an artist, it still is. And I started down the creative path very young, obviously. Went to art school in New York, studied photography, and then went into the fine art world, opened my own gallery in 2017, did that for a few years before starting to study wine, and then fell in love with the wine world, moved out to Willamette with my family in Dundee, Oregon, and started a tasting room called Artist Block last May. We've been building it since 2020, and ever since I've been operating the tasting room with my studio downstairs, so it's about 2,000 square feet of wine tasting and then 2,000 square feet of art production, and that's where I'm at.
How do you split your time with that? Like, is it 50-50 or
it's
depends
tough.
On the day?
Because this is a new business, I am giving the tasting room a lot of my attention. It's almost like a new baby where that baby gets a lot of the attention. And then the studio has been established for a long time. I usually check in with that several times a week, but it's definitely getting the short end of the stick right now.
Sure. Which makes sense. It's hard though, because if you're a creative person, that's where you get all your kind of energy out and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's creative, but it's also career creative. And so it's still a job. You know, it's almost when I step away from it that I get to be more creative rather than being immersed in it, because it's almost the day-to-day of the to-dos that take up most of my time in the studio, where when I'm away, I can get inspired. And like, for instance, I went to TEDx over the weekend. That was like insanely inspiring to see these creative people and the accomplishments that they've made, and made me think bigger and in different directions as well.
Yeah, the TEDx Portland group does a really nice job too, like just how they bring the community together and all the things that they've done.
Yeah, I had no idea that it was not just TED Talks, it was entertainment and design. And that to me was like a really great way to keep your attention, you know, first of all, as a attendee. And they have like Modest Mouse playing in the middle of sessions, and then different performing arts happening. And so it was very stimulating on all levels.
Yeah. And it's such a good representation of Portland that way as well, because we are such an art filled community and kind of creative community. It's nice to see them mix it up. It's not just speeches or talks.
Yeah. And there was one speaker in particular that That was really inspiring. Kat's coming to say hi. And he was a set designer for, he's done all the opening games of the Olympics. He's done like Taylor Swift's,
Eras Tour.
Swiftie, but yeah, Eras Tour. And it was really cool to see his plans for Portland and the things that he is imagining for the city, and taking that kind of live performance idea and translating it into a tourist experience when it comes to Portland. And so that was really exciting and inspiring to see that Portland's going to get kind of an injection of creativity. So
when you moved here to Oregon, was it purposeful? Like when you started studying wine or looking into wine, were you like, okay, that's the area we need to be?
When I decided to move to Willamette, it was out of a desire as a creative, I think, to escape a little bit from the madness of Key West, which is where I was before here. It was go, go, go there. I mean, it was spring break all the time, and I felt there was no time to create or be creative. And so coming out here was one, like an escape from, you know, stimulation in a way, but also a really inspiring region for wine because it was so up and coming and emerging. I went from not seeing any Willamette wines on a shelf at Publix in Florida to seeing five within a year.
Yeah.
And so that told me this place is doing things, like they're on the rise, and I want to be a part of that.
So even this, where you are, 20 years ago, my dad lived two houses back behind here.
Oh, wow.
And it was not vineyard. Like they had horses and they had all this land and so forth, but it was not vineyards. And so when we drove up today, I was like, that wasn't here and that wasn't here and that wasn't here. And so to see that explosive growth, and one of the reasons that what you're doing is inspiring to me is because it's female-led, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Lemonade Girl Height. But you also mentioned something about having a female wine master. Mm-hmm. And so can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so I found Bree Stock, who is our winemaker now. She's a master of wine, which is kind of like getting your doctorate in wine. She's education-focused, so she sits on the Oregon Wine Board as the education director. She heads up the wine symposium that happens every year, and she is a voice for thinking forward in Willamette and what we're kind of capable of. I met her through a tasting when we were doing market research, and it just kind of happened by fate, I think, that we got connected originally. And when I came to decide what to plant, I realized I was way in over my head. And so I reached through my phone and found her contact, and, yeah, we connected, and we just kind of had so much in common with our beliefs and how to think differently and approach things differently. And I had been wanting a female winemaker. I'm always surrounding myself by females in the workplace, and so it just seemed like the perfect fit.
That's cool. And so you've done this 2020, you come out here, you do it. What do you think was the hardest part about what you've been doing?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the hardest part is learning a new industry. I'm the type of person that thinks if they can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. But it's humbling at times when new problems arise and new challenges arise that you just had no idea to expect. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's probably good that I didn't know what to expect because maybe I wouldn't have done it. So almost my ignorance plays to my success in a way. I remember a guy telling me a long time ago, "You're so naive, it's cute." And a guy I dated in New York a long time ago. And I thought to myself, I'm never going to lose that. Like, I never want to lose that because that's one of my superpowers is like believing that I'm capable of it all. And I just love that he still follows me on Instagram because I'm sure he sees me just, you know, smashing by goals and boundaries. And yeah. So.
And do you think it really was or is naivete? Or do you think it's more of like a belief in self?
I think it's a belief in self. Growing up, watching my mom do everything, you know, for the family and support us and overcome challenges every day that, you know, most people wouldn't even attempt. Mm-hmm. That just was what I saw growing up and believed to be how it was.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure some of it was naive in the sense that I didn't realize the world operated in a different way. But as far as what we're capable of, no, I don't think it's naivety. I think it's, you know, believing in oneself.
Yeah. I asked because, you know, I did an episode with a couple of women and it was about the terms of endearment that are used with women and how they differ so slightly from that of men. And it's like kiddo, sweetie, naive, like just different terms that make it even aggressive or emotional, mm-hmm. where it
it's said in a way that makes it seem like a negative when, as you said, it's actually a superpower because it's this little extra something that I have that pushes me and makes me move forward and all of those types of things. So as you look at where you are today, what did you want to be when you were younger?
An artist.
Always. Always. Like from the earliest age? Mm-hmm. And do you remember like what was the first art you were into?
Photography. Okay. I became obsessed with, first I asked for a video camera when I was like 9 at Walmart. They were just starting to hit this, like the electronic department, the handheld video cameras. And I thought that was just the most fascinating thing. And so my mom, you know, not having a lot of money, would assign like a big Christmas to each kid every year. And so it just happened to be my turn when those cameras were starting to come out. And so I got my first video camera. I started recording everything that I could. And then my mom ended up giving me a film camera, which is when I started to learn my love for photography and more that instant gratification of creating something so beautiful. And I photographed my little sister from the start. And that's kind of what led me down the fashion photography of women.
Were your parents creatives or?
My dad's a musician and my mom's an artist.
Oh, wow. Oh, so it's in that DNA.
Best of both.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Probably a more open way of growing up too, because you're able to express yourself through the arts and through those things and not feel limitations.
100%. I think different women that have worked for me, my heart goes out for them in a way because they were raised by a blue collar family that didn't necessarily support them working for another artist. They couldn't quite wrap their head around that being a successful career for a woman and how they would make money at that. And so me not knowing any other path, I felt very lucky and supported by my mom, not necessarily to go to art school because she thought that was a waste of money.
Sure.
But to pursue the arts, like never a hesitation from my family. But again, other women that have worked for me, I'm constantly trying to encourage and show them, you know, you're the creative, you're the driving force in your life. And if you want to make money at this, you just have to figure out how. Even talking to a bunch of writers last week at an art opening, they were all kind of like, woe is me, you know, you'll never make money being a writer. And I'm thinking, you can make money at anything if you believe that's what you want. You just, you know, need to start doing the research and figuring out how.
Especially nowadays, like everything's so democratized, right?
Yes. With social media and like everything that you have access to at your fingertips for free.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you can't capitalize. You just have to want it, I believe.
And when you went to art school, did you at that time know that maybe you needed a business sense or sensibility or training or education as well, or maybe not then? It kind of came later.
I think it was always ingrained in me. I was a little hustler. Like growing up in high school, I was figuring out how to make money, you know, hustling, you know, candy bars or whatever it was that I could sell to make money. So the thought that like my art could make me money was hugely like eye-opening when I got my first gallery representation and sold my first piece for over $1,000. That was like, holy crap, people actually want to buy what I create. And this is actually a sustainable source of income, which I always maybe was thinking and dreaming and hoping and wishing. But then when it actually happened, it was really affirming.
How old were you?
I was probably 23 when I got my first gallery to sell my work. And I originally thought I'd go down the fashion photography route and shoot for Vanity Fair. And it just seemed like that was a male-dominated world. And I worked for several male photographers. And I don't know, it just seemed like I'd always be the intern where going out, I remember working for one photographer, particularly in London, and thinking, if I worked half as hard for myself as I am for this guy, like I'll be there in 6 months, no questions asked. And so that's what I did. I literally went home, started to work on my first series of fine art and approached a gallery and they politely declined. And then I didn't really take no for an answer. I said, well, why? And they said, well, photography, you know, doesn't necessarily sell as well as mixed media. And then that's how this series was born. I took photography and I made it mixed media. And then I went back and they said, it's interesting. I've never seen anything like it. We'll give it a try. And that's what got my foot in the door.
It's really kind of fun to watch you talk. It's so interesting because typically someone's on the other side of the screen. This is the first in person, right? So it's interesting to be right next to somebody who you can tell, first of all, likes what they do. Probably more than likes,
love,
but yeah. But it's also that there's it it looks like your brain is continually doing this, mm-hmm. is like, okay, so now what? And what's next? And how do I do this? And so it almost feels like if you had gone down the original path, it might have been really limiting for you.
I agree. I think after I got pregnant with my second kid, I was worried that I was going down the wrong path and I was getting distracted and I wasn't going to fulfill my dream of being a fashion photographer. And the more I kind of sat back and reflected on what I wanted for myself and my lifestyle, I realized it was going to be a lot of restriction, working mm-hmm. for someone else, working on someone else's timeline, under someone else's creative direction, under someone else's, you know, travel schedule, under someone else's salary restrictions.
And so, vision.
And all of it, it was yeah. just like, not going to be up to me. And as the control freak that I am, it was more and more alluring to work for myself and be a fine artist that managed my own time and work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what do you think has been the best part, like the rose, and what's the worst or the thorn?
I think the best part of working for yourself is the satisfaction of knowing that you did it and you get to carry your head high in the world that, you know, I'm not saying I did it by myself, but I did it, you know? And I think the hardest part is the insecurity or the worry that other people are relying on you. Mm. And so you go to sleep at night worrying about everybody else. Whereas when you work for someone else, you kind of leave your work at work. But when you run your own company, it's not about you anymore. It's about everybody else.
And I think, you know, I had a 25-year career in corporate environment, and you do take work home from you or with you, but it's different. It's about pleasing someone else, meeting someone else's deadline. It isn't about a satisfaction of self and fulfillment and helping other people. Mm-hmm. And when you and I talked originally, we talked a lot about like, look, I don't want to dwell on like this prevented me or damn the man or whatever. It's more about where do I get the fortitude and not just for myself. Yes, I want to do it for myself and my own, I don't know if satisfaction is the right word, but following your purpose and passion and being in something that drives you and thrills you and puts a light in your eye. But also, can I help other people in that process? Can I bring other women along and let them live in that purpose and live in that direction? And was that always a component of it for you?
It wasn't necessarily something on my mind. When I first started, I, out of necessity, needed an assistant, a production assistant or a studio manager. And so naturally, I gravitated towards another female that was creative and understood me. And I believe they had talent. And that's kind of where it started. And I was very young. I was probably 25 at that time. And then as time went on, I thought, man, I really like having a female team. I'm going to expand on that. And I expanded. And then as I saw these women starting their careers and being able to push them and encourage them towards believing in themselves and that they could do it too. And now, like in hindsight, seeing, you know, fast forward from 2017 to now, seeing those women open their own galleries on Duval Street and thrive in their own businesses, it's like, to think that I might have had a play in inspiring them to do that is so rewarding. And even at the TEDx event over the weekend, it really forced me to think about, you know, I told my husband, I said, you know, I'm really obsessed with like how I can do for more for my community now. And there was one, it was like Coda, the friend, he had this really amazing performance and it's not about you, was the kind of underlying theme. It's just, once you realize it's not about you, you'll be enlightened to how many people you can affect and how many people you can maybe make a difference in their lives. And so it's definitely something coming really hard to light for me is what can I do to not only like support my community, but more so the people that are here in my hands, you know, and how can I raise them up and help them grow and achieve their dreams? Because that's not about me.
When those women come to work for you, young women, older women, wherever they are in their life cycle, do you like being a boss?
I don't know if I know how to not be a boss. I'll like walk into certain situations and I just start bossing.
Right.
And my husband's like, okay, calm down. Like someone else is in charge. And so, yeah. And then I realized, man, it's actually really nice to not be the boss. Like when someone else plans a vacation and I just get to show up.
I said this one time to a girl who was working for me. I go, do you know what would be my dream? I was like, that someone knows me so well that they plan my vacation and they book everything ahead of time. So I literally don't have to make a single decision for 1 week. Mm. And I like making decisions. I'm pretty decisive. I've mm-hmm. been that way my whole life. But when you do it all the time mm-hmm. for a lot of people, it that just that 1 week, right? Like, oh, it's 2 o'clock. Let's get my massage.
I know. I heard that we make 35,000 decisions a day at the TEDx mm-hmm. event. Again, they were talking about that. And so that is definitely makes you realize how decisioned out you'll get. And even at the end of the day, when my husband's like, what do you want to do for yes. dinner? I'm like, don't make me answer one like, more question.
Just
you know?
Pick a meal and go.
Like, I will literally eat anything right now.
Yeah. My sister lives with me. And for Christmas a couple of years ago, I think it was during COVID because we were eating out a lot with delivery. And I bought her a wheel. And we just put like all the restaurants Amazing. In town and you just spin it. And then it was like neither one of us had to decide, right? Because it's like, and so now she uses it. And it, I noticed it the other day. It has directors. She's really into film.
Oh, cool.
And so it has directors. And when she can't decide what she wants to watch, she spins the wheel and chooses like a Coen Brother movie.
Life hack.
Like, and it's like $5 on Amazon. Just get a little wheel and.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's
for
dry
all
erase.
The decisions that we don't want to make.
Exactly.
I mean, we all need that in our life.
So when it comes to being a boss, there is the component about making all the decisions and the choices and being in control of something, which self-diagnosed total control freak here. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a sense of that from you in the mm-hmm. best possible way. But do you also enjoy the like coaching element, the element of you're helping somebody and you can see the light bulb in their eye that maybe you had 10 years prior?
I kind of hope that that's what they're seeing and not maybe just being just bossy.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's always telling me, don't give your advice unless it's asked for, mm-hmm. which I admire that, you know, because a lot of people just aren't ready. And for me, like, of course, I always want to see people reach their ultimate potential. And so it's frustrating for me to see someone who has so much potential and not necessarily know how to tap into that or not believe that they're worth it or that, you know, maybe they just don't even want it, but it's more out of I don't know what it is about certain women that have worked for me that I feel like I could call them every day with a pep talk. I could, mm-hmm. you know, lay out the whole plan for them on how to achieve their goals. But I'm trying to figure out now, like, what is it about those situations where I fell short? You know, maybe it's a deeper level of therapy. I don't know if that would help these women maybe believe that they're capable of more, but it is frustrating for me as a person who is so like high achievement to understand the brain of someone who's really kind of content. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think realizing for me to acknowledge that that's their decision and maybe just their lifestyle that mm-hmm. they prefer.
But where do you think that high achieving drive comes from for you?
Well, I believe it probably comes from a deep down insecurity of not being good enough.
That's fair.
That's what I've been told. That's what I've realized in therapy. You know, growing up with 9 brothers and sisters, there wasn't a lot of attention on any one of us. And it was always this compete for attention mm-hmm. and also validity and affirmation from parents, which, you know, I didn't get growing mm-hmm. up. And that is just me. I mean, obviously, like all my brothers and sisters grew up in the same household and not all of us are super high achievers. But me personally, how it affected me was, okay, how can I succeed and perform and, you know, take my mom to Italy and fly my dad to Hawaii and, you know, show them that.
Because then they'll see you.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whether that's solvable or not, I don't know if I mind because I love what I do and I love being an inspiration for other people too.
Where were you in the birth order?
7 of 9.
7 of 9. Wow. That's a lot of kids. So I have a similar disposition. I'm learning. My therapist has told me control freak, but perfectionism, which I was vehemently arguing with her about. I'm like, no, if you're a perfectionist, like things are perfect. And she's like, that's what a perfectionist would say, right? Like you're never satisfied and you're consistently. But I think that there's so many expectations put on people, right? And there's all these shouldas or couldas or supposed tos.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, even though I have always been driven, I have always been like, okay, what's next? What's better? going out on my own was very difficult for me because this idea of promoting and selling myself made me very uncomfortable. It made me feel gross. And I think sometimes that's that thing, right? Where maybe somebody wants to do something, but they feel like if they don't do it this way, if it's not perfect, mm-hmm. if it's not within the constructs of the box that's been given to us, mm-hmm. then they'll fail. And so candidly, you know, I've owned this business since 2015. I don't want to say it has failed twice, but it's not like I'm financially running up the mill and doing fantastic. Like it's still a work in progress and we're still pushing it forward. And some people don't have the conviction to work through the failure, right?
And you love what you do.
You'll make me cry. I do.
Yeah.
I think I was born for this.
And I feel like when that's the case, it doesn't matter if you fail. You're never failing, first of all, because you're following your dream, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
a new perspective on it, I think, is key to know that if you love being a stay-at-home mom, you're not a fucking failure. You know?
I love that.
Like you are living your true love. Yep. And if you love working at the post office because you love meeting new people every day and solving problems, like you're not failing at being an entrepreneur because that's where you love being. And so being an entrepreneur and working for yourself, and it is one of the hardest things because you're constantly stacking yourself up against everybody else in the world's achievements.
Yep.
You have to understand that like you're only seeing the end result for those people and how do you think they got to where they are? You know, they definitely fell. And one of the things on my board upstairs is one of our core values is we fail fast.
Yep.
If we don't fail, we don't learn. Yep. And so getting comfortable with falling, it's like, imagine watching your kid do something for the first time. They're going to mess up constantly, you know, but you have that grace and you, as a parent, and you say, you know, that's okay. We pick ourselves up and we keep going and that's how we get better.
Yep.
And when my daughter's like, well, I just suck at this. It's like, yeah, of course you do. You've never done it before.
Yep.
You know, it's like, but guess what? Doing it every day and messing up is like is the only way you're going to get up on stage and be able to play that song perfectly.
And those, like when you're talking about the women that you're like, I don't know why they're not believing in themselves. You know, I've worked with a few people like that as well. And we talk about rebounding the ball. I'm a big basketball nerd, or I have been previously. And I spent all week at a 13-year-old girls basketball tournament. So I'm real into it right now. But it's this idea that scoring doesn't win basketball games, right? It is defense and it is rebounding. And so if you fall on the floor because someone swats that shot and you are laying on the floor and not getting up, you're not going to get the next shot and you don't get the next try or the next ability. And so it's like, how do you rebound fast? And that failing fast, failing forward and not thinking of feedback as a step back. Mm-hmm. It's a feed forward, right? It's moving you forward to where you need to go because we don't know everything. We only know what we want, what we know when we know it. And as an entrepreneur, especially as you're starting out, there's this, and I don't know if it's for men or women, so I apologize if I'm gendering this and it shouldn't be. But for women, I think there's a built-in thing that we have to do everything. Mm. And we have to do it ourselves and it all has to be great and it has to look pretty. Mm. And so also, like, do you remember or recall the first time you knew it's okay for me to get other people to do the things? Because you have to do everything, right? Mm. And it's like, we just discussed this. I'm not tech. So if I'm doing all my tech, we're going to go a lot slower than we need to be going.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a necessity, you know, where you are at in your business. You don't have the luxury to bring someone in. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to figure it out. You got to get on YouTube. You got to sit down and learn how to do Google ads, which is what my thorn in my side has been for the last week. But it's like, I don't have the money to hire an advertising firm to help me right now. And so how can I manage this project myself just to get started. And then I find it super empowering to know, okay, this is what's supposed to happen. I don't necessarily need to involve myself now. I can trust that I'm making a good decision in who I'm hiring because I know the process through and through. And so I think, you know, when it comes to, we're talking about being a good CEO, it's like learning every aspect of the business and knowing how to do it yourself so that you can effectively outsource that. And there's a really good book out there called Who Not How that I just read. And it's kind of an interesting format, but it's all about finding the right who for the how and not spending the rest of your life focusing on every little task because that doesn't push the needle in your life.
Well, and because I'm so like, I am woman, hear me roar, and I want to help every woman or whatever, I can get a little too left on that or a little too far. And I had some people reach out to me that were like, I just want to help and I want to work for you. And I'm early in my career. I don't have experience. So can I help you? And I'm like, I don't have the money. And I said, so let me think about it. And I went back to the table and was like, what could I give them in return? Mm-hmm. If I don't have the financial means to do it yet, but I'm still giving them something of value, right? And to find these young people that are just starting out, Google Ads, I have an SEO person, right? She's in her final year of grad school and she's like, I need practical experience. Mm-hmm. Let's work together. We can teach each other, learn things, right? And so there's also this idea, and I think it's very well used in male CEOs, but it's this barter system or this bro code where like, oh, I know a dude and I know a guy and mm-hmm. they network and they help each other out in ways, yes, financially, but other ways. And learning to do that for me has been huge because I don't ask for help. I do everything myself. Mm-hmm. I see that relation there. And being comfortable with it because I never wanted anyone to feel used by me, taken advantage of by me. And I like the whole purpose of this company is to prevent people from dealing with some of the things I dealt in the corporate world and the personal life that were solely about being a girl and a woman. It wasn't about my skill set or my talent or ability. It was because I was a girl. And that means I'm to this, I'm to this, I'm to that. Like, I hate that word too, T-O-O. Like, I wish it would just go away. Because it's like, there is no such thing. It's who you are and leaning into who you are. And it was one of the things I was impressed by you when I met you is because you are so unapologetically who you are. And that's hard to own, take, accept. And so has that been a process or have you kind of just always been like, no, I'm pretty dope and I don't care who knows it.
Well, I joke sometimes to my friend and I say like, I'm not a narcissist, am I? You know, just, and she's like, the fact that you're asking yourself that
means probably. You're not.
But because there's times when I think like I am unapologetically living my truth and my love, and even my husband has struggled with me being so okay with chasing my own dreams and going after anything that I find, you know, my heart wanting. And I think that is hard for a lot of people to believe that they're capable of that. Again, probably from their upbringing and having parents who went to work for the man and came home and that was their life. And for me, that's never what I saw. I mean, my mom was fucking dumpster diving to rehab furniture, to sell it at a flea market, to put food on the table. It was like whatever it took, she was out there doing. And so I think the biggest inspiration to for me to continue on and to continue to learn and grow is listening to podcasts like this and understanding that like you are going through the same things that so many other people are going through and you just have to seek the resources to keep you going. And at any given time, I've got 6 different podcasts that are going to inspire me to just keep going, you know? So
do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
An introvert.
Okay.
Which is hilarious because a lot of people like see me on the
same.
You know, last week I was on the news twice and I had a big show opening and I was like putting the face on for the press and all this. And it's just like, I really would just rather not.
And you got to come home and restore that.
But I know how important it is for my goals. Uh-huh. And so I pull myself out of my shell. I put on a brave face. I show up for things like this because I want bigger things for myself and so that I can give bigger things to others. Mm. And it's learning how to come out of that introvert mindset and harness the power of your story and what you can give to others.
I love that because ultimately this is about storytelling and this idea that the more of our stories are out in the world, the more people can take the pieces that work for them mm-hmm. and create what their story is and take that and move something. And so I love that concept. So as an introvert, what recharges you?
That's a good question. You know, again, I'm referencing my friend Jesse upstairs, but when we were in Hawaii, she mentioned that she needed a day to herself. And I thought, that's a concept. I'm like, why have I never thought of that?
Yeah.
You know, I will say like taking a bath when I get home and telling my husband, don't make a freaking sound out there. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to know you're here. Like, mm-hmm. I want to just be and relax and recoup. I think that's good. I think doing things that are outside of my comfort zone, which my comfort zone is keeping busy and working and fixing things and doing projects. And when my husband's like, no, we're going on the boat today. This is when we live in Key West. I'm like, I can't go on the boat. I don't have service on the boat. I can't get anything done on the boat. And then when I'm out there, I'm like, wow, like this is incredible. This is life. This is what we work so hard for. And there's this funny story, and I don't know it exactly, but it was like a story of a fisherman, and this really successful guy comes on the boat, and he's like, you know, this is a great business you got here. You should buy 10 more boats and, you know, make so much money and have all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, but then what would I do? I would be back on this boat right where I am, you know? And so to some people, they're already living, you know, their joy. And I have to constantly remind myself how to balance life with accomplishments and sit down and appreciate the moments with my children as they're growing and hyper focus on the now rather than constantly worried about the future. I even told my husband last week, I was like, I really just want to stop thinking about the future for a while. And I want to be living in the present.
Well, and it kind of goes back to something that we started at when you are driven. So I'm going to back up. For me, during this whole like COVID and aftermath of COVID and so forth, a friend of mine that we both know, Miko, she said, you're the most productive person that I know. And I was like, I'm not. I'm the laziest person, you know. And then she proceeds to tell me all the reasons that's not true. And so I had to really evaluate it and think about it. And for me, this doesn't, I'm pointing to my head for those of you listening. My head does not stop thinking. It is 37 things at one time. I didn't know people could clear their brain. My brother was like, no, you're not normal. I'm normal. I can think at one thing at a time and I cannot. And so staying busy quiets the stuff that's going on in my head, right? And so it's like, oh, okay, then I can turn that part off and not worry or not stress. And a lot of high achievers, I follow this executive coach. They're from Novus Global and his name is Jason Jaggard. And he's always like, you got to go for the next and what's next and what's that? And I get it, right? You do want to continually grow and stuff. But I think it's about finding a balance between the growth and what's next in the future and finding moments of contentment, right? Where it's like you can, your shoulders come down and you appreciate how far you've come. Because if you don't, then you just continue on this hamster wheel of trying to be seen, looking for validation,
and
getting attention.
And you're going to hit rock bottom going that way. Yeah. And it happened to me when I opened the gallery in Key West. I had moved from Hawaii. I had a four-month-old baby, and I started a new business. Oof. And I was also heavily drinking at the time. And I got to a point where I ended up in the ER. It was panic attacks. It was anxiety. It was stress. And it took a long time to realize maybe I've put too much pressure on myself, that this is humbling. I'm not what I, you know, that naivety a little bit. Maybe I'm not quite as capable as I thought I was. Maybe I need to start looking at this in a different way and learning that those resets, those forced times where you're not achieving, are actually what propel you forward more than trying to hit, you know, grind the pavement.
And I also realizing it might not actually be about your capabilities.
Right. As I said, I was like, it's not, but in the moment you're thinking like, am I a failure because I can't just go like Elon Musk and, you know, go. But at the end of the day, like who knows what he does to reset. I'm sure he has his ways, but realizing that that's absolutely essential for balance and for mental health and for stamina. And like you think about when you go to the gym and work out, if you're not eating well and having lots of protein and hydrating, you're not going to perform. And so I think it's the same with life balance. It's like if you're not sitting to appreciate, you know, and truly appreciate the wins and the progress and the life that you've built for yourself and how lucky you are to be living your dream. You know, I look at people as I'm traveling every day and think, even the guy behind the car rental counter, I'm like, gosh, I'm just so grateful that I've believed in myself to get to where I am. And that I, for me, my joy and my journey is not working for anybody else. So whenever I see anybody working for anybody else, nothing against people who work for car rental agents.
Right.
It's just that
I'm glad that's not my journey.
I can't believe that, I'm so grateful and lucky to have what I have.
And I'm really glad you talked about the burnout because so I experienced something very similar in 2018 to 2019. lost somebody pretty important in my life. And afterwards, 8 more people in like a 6-month thing. And on the day that that person passed away, I was at the hospital at 4 in the morning and was at a 6 a.m. mandatory meeting at work. I mean, disheveled, unshowered, bawling. And then I proceeded to travel almost 300 days that year, the following year. And I was in the emergency room 13 times. Like, I was panic attacks, all of those things. And it was just like, no. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's when COVID hit. Mm. And I wasn't working, and I have a beautiful little tiny house with 2 rocking chairs and a fire pit in the front. And I sat out there every single day with the fire going, listening to music and like waving to neighbors, like those, like, you know, like in my bathrobe, because I actually wore a onesie. I called it Onesie Wines Wednesdays and would sit out there. But it was like my socialization. Mm-hmm. But also my sister makes fun of me all the time because it was like, did you know that bluebirds are real? And she's like, yeah, I went to school, Dawn. I know bluebirds are. And I'm like, no. Like, we have them. They're in our yard. I saw a bluebird for the first time. And she's like, but I had realized I started working at like 13 or 14. And all through high school and my 20s and my 30s, it was 2-3 jobs. It was going to school. Like, I had never stopped and just looked and like breathed and took a moment. And so while COVID was a very difficult time for so many people, it was the longest I had ever been in one place. I had been traveling 2 to 3 weeks a month for years. It's the longest I've ever lived anywhere. And so it was this mandatory or pushed or forced upon me slowdown that just made me reevaluate so much in my life and realize that maybe that hustle wasn't the reason I won. It could be an element of it, but I could do so much less and still be good because I cared about what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I put my all in. I cared about the people I was doing it with. And that reframing has changed so much about me that I'm almost like, I don't know what I would do going into corporate America. Like, how would that work and what would it look like? Because now I'm 48, right? It's a whole different life and lifestyle that I want now. And while I still want big things, it's not about the title or the rungs on the ladder the way that it was before. Because it used to be a checklist of the supposed to do's.
Because it was so maxed out for you.
Yes. And now it's more like success can be something different. And that's what I think is what you are showing the people that are working with you and for you and what you're expressing. It started with photography. It went into mixed media. It's all sorts of amazing art, which I will put on our social media to show this place because it's so gorgeous. And it's, okay, now what? And now it's wine. And you're doing that. And it's showing that different things can look different ways to different people and you don't have to fit in a box. And
yeah.
So, or a block, if you will.
My life looks 10 different ways in one day.
Yep.
So
I love that. So we're going to close up now. And I wanted to, before we leave, just say if there's anything that you maybe wish you knew before you started this journey.
That's a good one. That it's truly a journey and it's about the journey. It's not about the end. And I know that's so overused. You hear it all the time and you're like, yeah, whatever. But it's so true. It's so true that it's just about showing up every day and being and knowing that every day is not going to look the same and not, you know, giving up when things get hard and just, I think, being okay with the fact that like it's always going to look different. Like you were saying, it's not always going to look like the check boxes. It's going to be wild and crazy and it's just this ride of life and like learning how to ride the wave and fucking enjoy it is all we got.
I love it. Awesome. Thank you very much. Tell them the name of your company and where they can find you.
So we are Artist Block Wine and we're Artist Block Wine on Instagram and .com. And yeah, we're out in Dundee Hills and we'd love to see you.
Awesome. Is that also where they can find your art?
So yes, you can find some of my art on our website. It's linked to that. But I am Anna Sweet on Instagram is my fine art career.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'm so excited about this episode. It was a little bit of a departure or difference from some of the other ones, mainly because we recorded in person. So you actually got to physically be in the space of Artist Block Wines, which is just gorgeous and inspiring to have kind of art and nature all around you while you're sipping on a glass of wine. Although, candidly, we did not have wine while we were talking. And now that I think about it, that might have been a huge mistake. Next time, Anna, next time. So we titled this episode, How to Be in Service of Yourself and Others as Well, or some version of that wording. And, you know, in listening back to it, I was really struck by the way to be in service to others is ultimately to be in service of yourself. And I'm not talking about narcissism or self-involvement or self-indulgence, but this idea that if you follow the path that feels right, that is your purpose, it's your soul, it's your heart work, right? If you follow that path, then intrinsically you are going to help others along the way. And whether that is by literally or physically holding their hand and taking them on the journey with you, or whether it's somebody you'll never ever meet that's inspired by your journey, inspired by your work, inspired by the light that's in your eyes when you talk about what you do, and even the people that just get to experience what you put in their world and it makes them have a good day, a good hour, a good rosé with some cheese. All of those things help to inspire and empower others to go after the things that they want to do and live in their dreams. And I didn't know what to expect in talking with her. I had only met her a handful of times. But in the process of the conversation, number one, super impressed with myself that tears never flowed. Life good moment there, because when I listened back, I realized how much of it I needed to hear and how much I needed to hear from someone who is unapologetically confident in trying new things and doing things and following their heart in what they wanted to do and not being afraid to learn along the way and not being afraid to fail along the way and not really worrying about what other people think. When you start a business that is about speaking or a podcast, there's a certain amount of vulnerability that you need to bring with you to the conversation. And as I debated whether to start this podcast, and even in the process of recording the episodes that we've recorded thus far, I often question whether or not it will block my journey in other places because I'm being too vulnerable or too candid. And I hate that I'm saying that. I hate that I said it in my head and that I spent a few nights not sleeping because of it. But because I don't want that to be what the world is, right? I have this idealistic vision that we can all bring our full authentic selves to all of the work that we do and that there would not be ramifications for that. But I also know the realities of the world and these weird structures that are put in place to make us all the same and to create a level of comfort for everyone that often ends up making us all more uncomfortable, which is so ironic and weird. And I'll probably have a conversation with my therapist about that. But at the end of the day, in listening to Anna talk and knowing that people are going to say what they're going to say and people are going to think what they're going to think, and if those prevent me from going into spaces that I thought I wanted, maybe that's the universe telling me that they aren't the right spaces for me. And listening to that, feeling that, and following what I feel is my journey becomes really important. And so, you know, there was a moment in there where she stopped me as I started to talk about failure. And she said, but do you love what you do? And it was very difficult not to cry in that moment because this does mean something to me. And so I appreciate that provocation in that ability to shock me a little because, you know, I said this to someone this week. They told me, yes, this is what I love to do. And yes, this is what I want to do. But, you know, I don't think I'm good enough or I don't think this. And I stopped them and I said, what makes you think that you're such a piece of shit that you don't deserve the things that you would give to anybody else, whether that be grace, space, time, all of those things. You're wonderful. And so Anna kind of reminded me to say that to myself. I'm dope. And the things that I believe in and the things that I want to do, they're dope. And they may not be for you or for somebody, but they are the things that make me who I am. And I like who I am, and I want to continue to like who I am. And so that means not cheating myself out of following it full-heartedly. And I hope that as you listen to this episode, whatever that thing is that revs your engine and turns you on in the world, I hope that you know that you're good enough to go after it. And nobody, absolutely nobody knows what they're doing. So you just seek out the resources, you seek out the feedback, you Google and you YouTube and you TikTok and you do whatever to find out the things you don't know, to be able to move forward. And then when you're able, you find resources and people who are smarter and more capable and interesting and can contribute to the dream that you have. That's the lesson I got. I hope you got something similar or even better. And if you did, please make sure to share it with us. You can email us info@eliminategirlhate. You can DM us on our social platforms, Eliminate Girl Hate and Wait, Hold Up What on Instagram. And tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear it. Thank you, and we hope you'll come back and listen to us again.